We respectfully acknowledge the traditional owners of country throughout Australia where this podcast was recorded as the first storytellers, the first communities, and the first creators of Australian culture. We pay our respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging. Hi there, I'm Daniel Moore, and you're listening to Season 4 of the Hearing Architecture Podcast, proudly sponsored by Brickworks. In this episode, Sally Siu is speaking with registered architect Chanyi Lim. Who is a director of Sibling Architecture, a research-based practice with studios across Naarm, Melbourne, and Eora Country, Sydney. Chanyi is working across a range of civic, cultural, and residential projects in New South Wales, including the recently completed Southeast Centre for Contemporary Art, Darling Street Adaptive Reuse Apartments, and Dixon Street Chinatown. She is also an architectural educator and critic, where she is an adjunct associate professor at the University of Sydney and a member of the New South Wales State Design Review Panel. In 2022, Chanyi was the recipient of the New South Wales Emerging Architect Prize and Wilkinson Award for Architecture. Chanyi and Sally discuss how Sibling was established, how Sibling works across a variety of architecture typologies as well as exhibition design and research, and Chanyi shares some advice about navigating the architecture profession as an emerging architect. Let's jump in.
Afternoon, Chanyi. How are you today?
I'm good. How are you?
good. It's been great to have her join us today, and I'll have the pleasure of interviewing and chatting to Chanyi today for our upcoming episode. So welcome.
Thank you.
Most of us know her from her recent works as well as her Emerging Architect Prize, and I think it would be great to hear from her now that it's been a while since that has happened. What have you been up to since then?
Lots of things. It's been a bit of a whirlwind that year. I think it was 2021. It was during COVID. I was awarded that prize. And then in the same awards, I received the Wilkinson Award for the Stable House, which is my own home. And so it was, I was completely surprised and taken aback to receive both of those awards. And so I guess it's been more than 2 years since that now. And from that prize, I think within New South Wales and Sydney, Sibling has received a bit more, recognition within the industry. So just to give you a bit of background, I co-founded Sibling Architecture with a group of my friends down in Melbourne. We all started the practice together about 2012. Prior to that, we worked for a few years for other architectural offices in Melbourne, in Sydney, overseas. One of us also worked in architectural publishing and research. And I think we probably started the practice pretty fresh. 3 years out of uni is 3 or 4 years out of uni is pretty early, I think. Now looking back, it would have been great. I mean, I have no regrets, but I do think that there's so much to learn in practice after university. Like, we just thought, oh, get registered, you're done. Nope. But so I guess this first decade or so has been a big learning experience for all of us in running your own business. Running your own business with friends. And so 6 years ago, or 2017, is that 6 years ago? It's about 6 years ago. I decided to move up to Sydney to expand the office Sibling up here. And that's really for personal reasons. I grew up in Sydney. I'm a Sydney girl. I love Melbourne, but there's something about the landscape here that I feel really much part of. So, and I guess for personal reasons as well, I was nearing the later part of my 30s and knew I needed to settle down and have a family and be near my mum and, the rest of my family. So, my partner and I moved up here, for family and work reasons. And I guess, Stable House is My Own House, I was just saying. It's a project, yeah, that it's still, it's part of a wider project that I'm working on with my mom and my sister and our partners. Stable House is the first stage of it, and the second stage is extending an existing cottage, which is on the same lot as a stable house, into another dwelling. And then both dwellings will have this big shared kind of communal space in between. And, yeah, I guess the idea is that both houses are designed as our families evolve. So my sister and her very young family, she just had a baby this year, and I just had a baby. Well, no, I have a toddler now, and I'm also about to have another child, which is terrifying. In a few months. Yeah. So I guess as our families grow and evolve, the houses will accommodate those kinds of shifts. And yeah.
Thanks for that, because I think that's a very, very great way to start our conversation today. Yeah. Because through Imagine, our committee, I've had the privilege to host a housing tour.
Yeah.
And visit firsthand and see Stable House.
Yeah.
In person. And as you described, Stable House is so special because it's almost like a hidden gem. Mm-hmm. If you walk by currently, you won't see it from the outside mm-hmm. the streets. To exactly what you said as a Sydney girl, you know, it's located just in the, you know, inner city, you know, we're in Sydney, we're short on land. As a family project, it's amazing to watch you be able to transform mm-hmm. what otherwise at times would be seen as a very small plot of land mm-hmm. that you couldn't possibly mm-hmm. build. Two dwellings
yeah.
to fit, you know, the family arrangement yeah. that you have. And I think it's amazing to watch you describe it, because it's just like any one of us in Sydney looking for a place to have a growing family, mm-hmm. to be able to accommodate extended family mm-hmm. at times, and to really make our planning controls work. Because mm-hmm. I remember you vividly talking about what it would mean to build two houses on yeah. land and the kind of heritage restrictions. Yeah. How does it compare designing and building for your own family versus all the upcoming projects that you may have had? Because it was great to see you put all the ideas and thoughts into it. Yeah,
I mean, it was really hard being your own client, even though, you know, my husband, my partner, my boyfriend at the time when I started working on it, like, he's very much been part of the process. But earlier on in the piece, he wasn't as invested, and then as, you know, our relationship matured and we became a bit more serious and, you know, committed, and our plans started to, you know, really lock in with each other, I guess he became more of a client. But that was also during the documentation phase, and when the concept and the planning was all locked down, and so it was frustrating but also amusing to be questioned on the kind of, you know, general layout and planning of the house. And I was like, hey, we've already got a DA for this, we cannot switch this around from here to there. And he's a graphic designer, so, you know, he has his opinions on, you know, aesthetics and style. And so, but mum and my sister were also clients as well, I guess. Or yeah, I mean, client sounds weird, but collaborators, I mm-hmm. might say. Yeah. My mum's actually an architect. She doesn't practice so much anymore, but, you know, she just has a wealth of knowledge on, yeah, building and construction and design. And so she was always someone to, yeah, seek advice from. But she was very, I could tell she was being very mindful of not, you know, trying to establish too much of her ideas onto the project. And my sister, so the stable house that we're in is actually, she will move into that, and then we'll move into the second stage of the project. And so she's a chef, and she works in food, and the design of the kitchen and the layout of that, well, not just the design of the kitchen, but the design of the whole house being centered around the kitchen was a really key part of the planning of the project. And I guess it's quite central to our family, where a lot of things revolve around food. Yeah, a lot of things revolve around coming together at a table. And yeah, meals. Yeah.
Such a beautiful story, because I remember you vividly introducing that as well, and it was such a beautiful Saturday morning where it's so light-filled.
Yeah.
I think though a very small little building, it was very, very open and connected with nature all around through pockets of light.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
All right. Jane, it's great to hear you talk about your family and your sisters. And sounds like you're in a family of creatives. It's great to be able to hear you talk about your mum being an architect and your own practice as you mature in your career path. And it's also very great to hear you talk about how you started so young, you know. And it's true, we're never going to be old enough to be fully able to establish our experience before we start a firm. So it's great to hear you talk about taking that leap and positioning it around the Emerging Architect Prize that the Institute offers.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think that prize is able to, you know, position an architect? How does it benefit an architect versus the way you see it prior to winning it to then where it's taken you from there on?
Yeah. I think the main opportunities that we got following winning the prize was forming collaborative relationships with other practices here, larger ones. So since winning the prize, we have been invited to, you know, be on competition, like large competition teams as like the emerging practice. And, to collaborate on, you know, other exciting projects. So right now we're working with Aspect Studios on Dixon Street, Chinatown. So Aspect, the, you know, lead consultant is obviously landscape and urban design, and we're the, you know, architectural studio that are working with them on developing the revitalization of Dixon Street, which is such a, you know, special project for me. And then at the moment, we're also working with Tonkin, Zuleika and Greer on the Riverside Theatres Design Competition. And prior to that, we were also on the Powerhouse Baltimore Design Comp with them as well. So I think that I definitely think that the Emerging Architect Prize helped with, you know, our visibility within the industry with other practices. We didn't get, our phone wasn't ringing off the dial for people to design. Like, we didn't have potential clients calling to ask us to design a stable house for them, which is funny because that's kind of what I thought might happen, that we might get more resi, like heaps of resi clients. But I don't know, maybe it's just too like weird for people in Sydney. That's interesting. But, you know, I think it's really exciting to have the opportunities to work on these large public projects, whether they're comps or, you know, actual projects that will be delivered. It's a wonderful opportunity that as an emerging, you know, practice, it's really difficult to get that, exposure on public work. Yeah.
No, I think that's amazing because exactly what you touched on, it's great to hear you talk about the great range of projects you participate in.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember you once said, you know, sibling architecture doesn't do one type of project and it's great to also previously hear you touched on that you started off doing sometimes exhibitions, smaller projects, and research is part of the practice.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a bit more about the almost non-standard practice that you've gone through or like built up to get to stable house and now cultural projects that are large scales in the region?
So when we first started, so before Sibling Architecture was established in 2012, we were still practicing myself, Amelia Borg, Nicholas Braun, Timothy Moore, and at the time, Jane Court, John O'Brenner and Alan Ting, they've since left, and Jessica Brent. We were all working on projects outside of our day jobs, and, you know, they were always kind of spatial projects but not necessarily, I don't know, architecture. And they'd often be, you know, exhibition designs or installations within the context of galleries or temporary design festivals. And so all of this was happening in Melbourne. And I think it's interesting, like reflecting now, that at that time, and still there is a lot of opportunities and platforms for young designers or creatives to really showcase their capabilities. And I guess Sibling was kind of born out of that. And then, yeah, you know, bit by bit, we started getting the kind of temporary commissions started to become, you know, someone's renovation or someone's shop fit out. And that's when we started to make the move to become an architectural practice. But I suppose some of the ideas that we were exploring in those early, you know, experimental projects have always are still running themes within our practice. And yeah, we still undertake like design and architectural research. So we just received a grant to by the Victorian Creators Fund to undertake research in sensory design. And I think, you know, if you look at some of our earlier experiential projects, you'll see that there is a lot of, maybe unknowingly, there's a lot of curiosity in the design of sensory spaces, so the play of texture and material and light and acoustics in these experiences. But that has kind of been developing into larger architectural projects. So the biggest one that we've just completed is the Wangaratta District Specialist School. So it's a school for children with clinically diagnosed disabilities. And so you're dealing with a lot of physical and neurodiverse needs. And so the brief for that school was, yeah, to create learning spaces, but also spaces around that designed for students to be able to retreat in.
Absolutely. It's a beautiful school. I've seen it published early in the year, and I think you're definitely spot on. I love Sibling Architecture's work because it's fun. It seems like, you know, spaces are to be enjoyed in all sorts of manners and formats, and all your projects seem to be very spatial as well, mm-hmm. with the sequencing of play across all scale, mm-hmm. and all types of projects. And I think it was great to hear you talk about the humble beginnings of Sibling Architecture and how that network of support that you've built, because I want to give you a public congratulations here on not just the recent release projects, but even now submitting for the Imagine Project Award.
Oh, yeah.
Watching you raise young leaders of tomorrow is actually quite heartwarming to see. Mm-hmm. Do you want to share with us a bit how the practice culture works and how you collaborate internally between the studios and even externally?
Yeah, so our Melbourne office is the main, well, the larger practice. And so in total there's about 13, 14 of us, like 10 in Melbourne, 3 of us here in Sydney, and we really work as one big office. Obviously we have like the projects that are New South Wales and Victoria, but, you know, everything across the two offices is shared. Like we do, you know, virtual design reviews across projects, you know, even our weekly kind of team resourcing meeting is done on Zoom. And so it means that our New South Wales team is across what's happening in Melbourne and vice versa. And yeah, when it suits, we'll share, like we'll work across projects as well. And I think, yeah, there's a benefit to that, obviously, because, you know, we get to learn how different, you know, states or different systems are delivering works, and there's a bigger diversity of projects as well. But, yeah, our team, I guess, is pretty young. So, yeah, my co-directors and I, Amelia, Nick and myself, we're registered architects, and we're like, this is the first year that qualifies the Imagine cohort.
Congratulations. <Yeah. laughs> You are now emerged.
We're emerged. We're aging. So you can imagine everyone else within the team is within that cohort. But I think, yeah, we're growing in our, not so much like the size. I mean, yes, we are growing in the size, but in our experience as well. And yeah, so this year we entered actually quite a few projects into the Imagine category. So the Southeast Centre for Contemporary Art, which was formerly the Bega Valley Regional Gallery, we entered that into the Imagine category and also the public building category. And in Victoria, we've entered the Aries Inlet School and the Wangaratta District Specialist School into those categories as well. And for SECA, for the Southeast Centre for Contemporary Art, you know, we've had 4 or 5 different people work across that in its entirety. So we started working on that in 2018 with Bega Valley Regional Council. And it was myself and my co-directors, Nick and Amelia, who, you know, started developing the concepts. And then that was our first kind of public project commission here in New South Wales. And then we had one of our grads in Melbourne work on it, and then my team, you know, I started to employ people here. So then I had Andrew and Eleanor work with me on it, and then Eleanor has led the project from, I guess, yeah, kind of end of DD, doco to construction. And so it's been like a big learning experience for all of us. But we're really lucky to have, you know, been given the opportunity by council and the gallery director, Ian Dawson, there. I mean, I think he really wanted, you know, a fresh look, well, a fresh take on what a contemporary regional gallery could be and could do for its community. And so even though we hadn't delivered a project of that scale before, we worked on lots of interesting cultural projects, small galleries and, you know, like I was saying, like experimental type installations within gallery context. I think he saw the potential of how our thinking could inform a new type of gallery within Bega.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
We all know where Bega is.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to see it in person because having seen the published image, it's actually transformational. And seeing you present and you and team present the concept, it definitely is also unimaginable what it was before and now what they get to have.
Yeah.
Because I think it's amazing to be able to transform a town and offer them what, you know, what they may never thought could have in general. And looping back to everything we've discussed today, it's amazing to hear you talk about your design process and all the values you hold, because I see a great passion in cultural projects.
Mm-hmm.
It's great to hear your excitement for the upcoming Dixon Street project because as you know, someone that comes into the city often, you know, we work in this space, everyone's excited to see our city transform.
Mm-hmm.
And just as we're looking at your culture projects, whether it comes from schools or art galleries, you've really built up this portfolio to allow you to pivot and take on projects that you might not conventionally qualify for. That's that's on paper because of it might be due to the size of your practice or just in general, you know, the size of the team even at times, right? So if we were sharing with anyone listening today, you know, reflecting on this process, what have you built up to help, how do I describe this, help you have these conversations with potential clients to get them to be engaged with the kind of skills you bring without looking at, let's say, the offer's, you know, size or, you know, capability? Because to your point, many of our tendering process is onerous. It has qualifications that at times on paper is hard to tick off every now and then.
No, that's a good question. I'm actually putting together a tender for a project now, and I was just trying to answer that question or trying to think, you know, because we're up against, it's an invited tender, we're up against some very established studios here in Sydney, which, you know, it's great to be considered amongst them, but I'm kind of like, oh my God, they all have, you know, 1 or 2 decades more experience than us. There's no hope in hell. But, you know, you've got to throw your hat in the ring and have a go. And so, yeah, I've been trying to articulate what's our point of difference and what we bring. And I guess, yeah, the kind of research-based background we have. And I know a lot of practices, larger like BaseMart, larger kind of commercial practices have whole teams that do design research. But I think the research that we do is a bit more, you know, it's really embedded and integrated within our studio because it's small. And so it's not like you just have a separate kind of team, you know, running the research on like, I don't know, facade climate control or something. It's like very much each project that we undertake is, you know, rethinking or reevaluating, yeah, a a research theme of ours. And yes, yeah, so I think there's that. And then maybe the other value that we add is that because we're a smaller team, you always have, you know, it's not just one director, but all of the directors always kind of fully engaged with the project, even though it may be led by a project director. We're not siloed. And so, like I was saying, the two offices work across each other. So we have lots of different projects that we draw upon to, yeah, contribute to those projects. And there was something else that I can't quite remember.
No,
that answers your question.
Yeah, definitely. There's definitely a lot, because I think at times, you know, say, coming out of uni, you may have all these ideals about architecture, the projects you get to participate in as you transition as well, is a certain time that might be heavily more strongly linked with academia. And then as we get through practice, sometimes, you know, as we say, physical constraints of site, planning controls and all might kind of come forward that we forget to explore areas of architecture and that we, you know, start off with and be very passionate about. So it's great to hear sibling architecture puts it forefront, and certainly everyone takes research in different ways. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily starting a research center in a practice. So it's amazing to hear you talk about practice, amazing to hear you talk about your team. On a personal level, then maybe as a female architect, I normally like to use the word female because architects are architects.
Yeah.
How have you evolved and transformed through the years on how you interact with our colleagues, or how you see young women coming through in your practice? Because I think International Women's Day just passed.
Mm-hmm.
And often we talk about how we need to really invest in our leaders.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had any tips and tricks to share with anyone that come forward to ask for a bit of mentoring and advice?
Yeah, I think the advice I would give, and, you know, it's also still something that I'm learning, is just to have more confidence in yourself. I think, I mean, I'm also speaking as an Asian female architect, and, you know, there's conditioning and ways that, you know, I've been raised that I'm starting to discover impact the way that I work or react, or, you know, understand where I sit within and the kind of ecosystem of the profession. And I've had to unlearn some things. And, yeah, one of the things I've had to kind of unlearn is to not, like, to stop questioning myself, or, you know, if I've ever been questioned about, if project's on site and I get questioned on, you know, a detail and how it's drawn or whatever, my first response would be like, I've done it wrong. It's wrong. The builder's right. I'm sure a lot of people have had this, but I think, yeah, I've had to unlearn, you know, assuming that those that are male know better than me. So I think the advice I would give is just to trust that the decisions you've made are the right ones. And just because someone's older and a male and white doesn't mean that they're always right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a hard thing to say, but yeah. And I think culturally, like, if I reflect on the way I was brought up, you know, growing up, you know, I was born here, so I'm an ABC. And there's always this tension, like, my parents came here for university, so there's always been this tension of them wanting to really hold, you know, still hold these Chinese, so I'm Chinese, Malaysian, Australian, but hold these Chinese values in family values, and, like, I really appreciate it. But there's always been that tension of, like, my kind of Chinese cultural heritage and that upbringing and, like, you know, Western kind of values. And I think, yeah, one of the things that I was taught is not to question your elders, even if something was blatantly wrong. Yeah. And that's not necessarily work, but just, like, you know, everyday life. If your uncle or aunt says that's how it is, that's how it is. And that's, like, that's something that I've only started to realize has kind of had an impact on the way that I have been practicing, so I've had to unlearn that. And, you know, Sally, you're an Asian woman. I wonder if you share some of the same, same things as me. I don't want to stereotype, but that's my experience.
Thank you for your sincere comments. I think it's rare any of us talk about it in public, but conditioning is definitely real. And the first time I realized it was coming out of uni in my first job, a project architect looked at me and said, do not ever let your cultural values get in the way of the way you go about, you know, building your career. And I thought he was very candid in telling me that. I was so young, I didn't know I had to make sure that was front of mind. But certainly through the years, I once in a while I remember that comment and tell myself, definitely, because I think not many of us realize our environments create who we are. And it has its own impact, definitely. And that's beyond just gender. So, which is, it's very interesting. And I think I wish more people talked about it. Because it's not just us, but there are people of different backgrounds that bring their own packages. So, this is a great chat that we've had today. Not often we get to hear from a genuine person. And it's a very honest chat as well that I hope many listening are benefiting from it. If we switch the tone and, you know, make it lighthearted as we close. If you were an architect today, have you ever thought about, you know, being another profession?
Oh, all the time.
I love that question. Because, you know, when did you first, you know, come up with the idea that you thought you'd want to be an architect, aside from the conditioning of it's in your family, as we said?
I don't know. But I think if I wasn't an architect, I mean, maybe I would have been a landscape architect. I mean, landscape architects here in Australia, there's so much great work and, there's so much space.
It's not just plants.
Urban, but, also a stronger connection with country and environment, I think. More progressive than, say, architecture.
I can see that in Stable House.
But if I wasn't in any design, I don't know. I don't know. It's, I really admire those people. You come across them every now and then that have had, like, seven career changes. And, like, they do each one so well. And I'm always like, wow, if I didn't do Sibling, what would I do? You know, because it just sounds so scary because it's something I'm done since I was, you know, for the last 12 years now. And
that's amazing.
Yeah.
And then one final comment on it, if somebody asks you what's the value of an architect, you know, how do you begin to have a conversation with them on that topic?
I think the value of an architect is bringing people together. So in their work and in the design, but also in the process, bringing clients together with the end users and bringing different consultants together to, you know, make the project work. So that's, that's what I think the value for the architect is.
Amazing. Thanks for that.
Thank you. It's nice to chat.
Great to chat.
This has been Hearing Architecture, proudly sponsored by Brickworks. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you so much to our guest, registered architect and director of Sibling Architecture, Chanye Lim. Thank you so much for sharing some stories about Sibling and the unique way your practice has developed over time. We can't wait to see what Sibling and you do next. Our sponsor Brickworks also produce architecture podcasts hosted by Tim Ross. You can find The Art of Living, Architects Abroad and The Power of Two at brickworks.com.au or your favourite podcast platform. If you'd like to show your support, please rate, review and subscribe to Hearing Architecture in your favourite podcast app. If you want to know more about what the Australian Institute of Architects is doing to support architects and the community, please visit architecture.com.au. This is a production by the Australian Institute of Architects, Emerging Architects and Graduates Network, in collaboration with Open Creative Studio. The Institute production team was Madeline Jenkins and Claudia McCarthy, and the Imagine production team was Sally Sue and Daniel Moore. This content is brought to you by the Australian Institute of Architects Emerging Architects and Graduates Network in collaboration with Open Creative Studio. This content does not take into account specific circumstances and should not be relied on in that way. This content does not constitute legal, financial, insurance, or other types of advice. You should seek independent verification or advice before relying on this content in circumstances where loss or damage may result. The Institute endeavours to publish content that is accurate at the time it is published, but does not accept responsibility for content that may or will become inaccurate over time.